Mrs. Shuck is a school psychologist from Rockland County, New York. She is dedicated to helping children find success during the school day and beyond through her work with teachers, principals, parents, and children. She holds two master's degrees, one in special education and one in school psychology, as well as having completed extensive postgraduate work in administration. After working for the New York City Department of Education, she assumed the role of director of the Learning Center at the Beth Ruchel School in Muncie, as well as founding Pathways Consulting Services, LLC, a professional development agency. She has served as the permanent educational consultant for many schools in Muncie over the last decade and presents trainings throughout the country. Mrs. Shuck is also an adjunct faculty instructor for Mercy College, teaching in both the undergraduate and graduate programs of special education and psychology. From all her responsibilities, she most enjoys her counseling and coaching sessions with children and teens, giving them the cognitive, linguistic, social, and emotional tools they need to succeed in the real world. I'm also happy to present our technical facilitator for tonight, Betsy Kane. And Tzipora, the floor is now yours.
Thank you so much, Judith, for that nice warm welcome and the review of, you know, how we're going to run this webinar. I'd like to welcome everybody tonight and tell you a little bit about what I'd like to accomplish. In the summer, when it was still nice and warm outside, the director of Hidden Sparks, Debbie Niederberg, called me, and we were discussing the organizational challenges that many children seem to have in the classroom, and we were trying to strategize different ways that teachers can help them and parents can help them. And what we noticed is that many children begin the year on a high. They're neat, they're organized, their things have a place, their homework gets done, they have the supplies, and that kind of fades fast. Usually by, you know, the beginning of November, it's really gone. And we don't often notice that those skills are gone until the middle of the winter. But I don't know about you, at this time of the year, I feel unproductive with the cold weather outside. For those of you that are listening from the East Coast, we're on the eve of a very big nor'easter. It's hard. It's hard to get our acts together. It's hard for the students to get their acts together. They come home and it's dark shortly after they come home. They don't get the chance to run outside and play and to rejuvenate. And this is a long stretch of the year. And sometimes when we get after Pesach into the spring, we're in that spring mode and it seems so much easier. But by that point in the year, there's very little time left. So Debbie and I decided that this would be a good time to kind of give teachers different ideas and different empowerment to get things back on track and help the children so that we don't lose this part of the year. So what we really want to say is welcome to the mid-year slump. Good habits, organization, and neat supplies are things of the past. We could all use a seventh inning stretch. Attention given to these areas now will help ensure a successful second half of the year for both you and your students. So some of the ideas we're going to present and discuss tonight are for the students. Some are actually for parents as well that you can convey, and some are for the teachers. What specifically I'd like to accomplish is that maintaining organization is a skill unto itself. It's one thing to start off organized. It's another thing to end off organized. But the maintenance of how things go is actually a skill to teach students that things need to be kept up. And I'd like to offer some concrete strategies towards that end. If you have any specific questions along the way based on your classroom or based on the students that you know, please don't hesitate to use the chat room and we'll address it as we go. Recently, I think it was about mid-January, I was shopping in Target. And then later that week, I had to pick something up at Walmart. And I noticed that they had a lot of the same type of advertising. And if you turn on the radio and you're listening to different gyms that are advertising, it's the same thing. They're looking to get people back on track at this part of the year, whether it was a New Year's resolution or whether, I guess, the commercialism for the holidays is finished and they need to sell you something before President's Week or Valentine's Day. They use that expression, get back on track. But I said to myself, that's actually a really good time to do it, especially in schools. The first thing a teacher needs to think about before even getting her students back on track is you need to be a model. of everything that you want the students to do. So come into school tomorrow, or we're going to have a snow day tomorrow, next week. Look at your desktop. What does your teacher's desk look like? What does it look like? What do your drawers look like? How many tests, quizzes, do-nows are in your folder or in your work bag that you haven't returned? Let's get that back. We've kind of been moving along in the curriculum, but I'd like to ask you to take some time and plan yourself out. You have the end of February, March, part of April, May, a little bit of June. Given the amount of time that you have in teaching, where do you want to end up? What's your end goal for all the subjects that you teach? And based on your end goal, kind of backtrack to say, am I going to be able to fit in everything I need to in this realistic time? And does this trajectory work with the testing calendar that I have coming up, with the holiday break, with the spring vacation? And if it doesn't look like you're going to be able to finish, make the adjustments now. What will you see through? What will you cut out? What will you add in if you see that you actually will have extra time on your hands? Don't let that be a surprise. Do you have the necessary supplies and books? Have you run out of things that you need from the office? And are you in compliance with all the school paperwork? Sometimes in the beginning of the year, the same thing happens for teachers. We're fresh and we're excited and we're handing everything back in, and whether it's our lesson plans or our school referral forms, but sometimes this part of the year, things take longer. So let's get ourselves all cleaned up, given in and on time, and now we can go on to address the student needs. What I'd like you to do is observe carefully for about 3 days. Look at everything that's going on in your classroom. Keep a running list. What needs to be cleaned out? Is it the desks of the students? Is it the cubbies? What needs to be retaught? What systems don't they have in place? What rules are they getting lax with? What subjects have you kind of let fallen by the wayside that you need to pick up again? Make yourself a really big list that you can work from. You may not be able to tackle everything, but at least you'll know where you want to begin. And once you have that good list, prioritize. What I'd like you to start to do is actually, the environment seems easier to clean up and organize. So we're going to be taking, as Judith said earlier, we're going to be taking a macro look at everything that goes on in your classroom and then focusing in a little bit more carefully on different specific pieces. The first thing, like I said, is let's look at the environment. Check every bulletin board that you have up. When was that bulletin board placed? Are there apples from September? Are there menorahs from Hanukkah? Are there turkeys from Thanksgiving? Anything that's up on a bulletin board and any type of student work display that's there really should not be older than about 4 weeks old. After about 4 weeks up in the classroom, it tends to fade into the background, and the students actually don't see it anymore. They've become accustomed to it. But if a visitor were to come to your classroom and see something that's very, very outdated, or something they covered a long time ago, it looks as if we don't have the time to set up something different. So this would be a great time to say to the students, we need to update. We need to put more of your work up. We need to put newer things up. We need to show, you know, ourselves in this learning environment how we've grown. If you have a classroom library, are the books the same ones you started with? Chances are then, unless your classroom library is very large, the students have read them all, or at least read the ones that they're interested in. Trade with another teacher. Get some new books. If you have any place in the classroom to display children's literature that's seasonal or current, now would be the time to have some books about presidents, to have some books about spring, to have some books about hibernation. And keep changing the books that are available. And I would even say to the students, here are some new and exciting books I'm bringing. What projects have been going on? Sometimes we assign certain things, long-term book reports, some contests, and we haven't really been consistent with keeping up. So if there's any outstanding projects, let's finish them up so that we can begin the second term and the spring with a clean slate. And I also mentioned windows here. I know in some schools, use the windows as another place for display, and whether they're putting up things with tape or whether they're using what is a wonderful feature tool, the window markers and the window paint that comes right off, now would be a good time to redo that. And we still may need to have some snowflakes up, but we can also start thinking ahead. If anybody has any questions about updating the environment? Okay, so if I don't see anything in the chat room, I'm going to keep going. The next thing, once we focus on the outside environment that the students are in, are actually their personal belongings, their desks and their binders. Where is the completed work? Can it go home? What needs to stay? The folders that their mothers bought them in September are probably gone or ripped at this point. You might ask for some new folders. Did we finish complete units of study? If so, what I like to suggest is archiving, especially when we get to junior high, when the girls or the boys have a large set of notes. Not all the notes, if we're not actively using them, need to be in the current binder. So I teach them what an archive system is, and I'll say, wow, we finished the unit on the Great Depression. So you have a choice. You can either staple all your notes about the Great Depression, and I'll put it in my big 5-inch binder, and right before finals at the end, I'll give everybody out their notes, or you can keep it at home. So we want to teach them that we don't have to have it, you know, accessible on a day-to-day basis if it's something that we finished with. I want them to check their supplies. Now's a really good time, and, you know, Target and Walmart did have the items on sale. Make sure they have the pencils, the pens, the paper, the whiteout. These things were long finished from the beginning of the year. For some students, the longer the year went on and the more things you tended to put in the desk, the harder it was for them to organize their desks. For every now and then, we'll have a student that we need to make a visual map of the desk. We spend some private time with them, whether it's before school or after school or during lunchtime when nobody else is in the room. We take everything out of their desk. We, with them, select what's going to go back in and where it's going to go. And then we either draw a picture of that or take a quick digital photo, and we say, this is what it needs to look like. So every week, 2 weeks, however often your desk is going to need it, we want to get it back to this picture of it. Another thing we want to do is, if we notice the book bags, they're dirty on the outside, they're dirty on the inside, there's snacks, there's notes that never made it home, there are tests that were signed and returned, and now they're not sure where they need to go again. So what I would say is, let them empty everything out in school. Make one bag, a plastic bag of things that can go home and stay at home. Have the homework, basically just a homework for the mother or the father or whoever else is going to do it. Even the child can do it, and just wash the book bags at home. The kids will enjoy that that's their homework. And if there's nobody available to wash it, they can at least wipe it out. But all these things that we're doing, when they're going to do it in a few day period or over a week, they're going to get that sense of renewal and refreshing and come back with a different attitude to all the curriculum that we still need to finish. Some people are thinking, okay, it sounds like you're starting a little bit of early spring cleaning, but I end up doing that anyway. I'll probably do it in the end of March and the beginning of April, and that's only about 6-7 weeks away. Pesach is right around the corner, but what I find is we're going to do some Pesach cleaning at that point in the year in our classroom. But when we leave it to that point in the year, we're going to really lose some solid teaching and organizational time now. So even though we may come back after that spring break refreshed, the end of the year is a high pressure point of the year. We're finishing our curriculum, we're taking state tests, we're taking school finals, we're pulling things together, we're having final assemblies. And it's going to be very, very hard to give the attention to all these organizational points and even different scheduling points that may be needed. So now is a really good time to do that. We also want to upgrade all the routines, the rules, and the systems that we have. And these three are kind of interconnected, but they each have a specific purpose. A routine is how we get through the school day. So whether it's the schedule of the day, whether it's arrival, dismissal, I do math, I do reading, I do chumash, then I do nothing, we have recess. Students need to know what the daily routine is. For younger grades, we might have some Velcro sentence strips on the board where a child puts up the daily routine. For older students, we might just have somebody write it with the word agenda. And just by letting them know what's coming next, that helps them order their minds. And older students, it helps them order the things that they need. Which books are we doing? Oh, today's a spelling day. I better make sure to take my spelling book out of my locker. And I also like the idea of teaching them to cross things off. You're modeling as an adult, making a to-do list and getting it done. The systems are how we get through the routine. So if we do literature on Tuesdays and our literature books are kept on the cart, who gives out the books? How are papers passed? When do we give in homework? When do we copy down homework? Each part of a routine has a system to get it done. So we want to look and say, are there any parts of the day that I'm constantly getting frustrated with the students with? Or some students are really falling apart during that time, or they're just not managing it. They're just not getting it done. So do they understand the system, or does the system I have work for them? Another thing that I'd like to do with many teachers, over the first week of school, introduce some classroom rules, whether you've done it then or whether you want to do it now. I love the idea of using what we call a one-word rule, and I often will even elicit that one word from the students. After discussing this with many teachers in many different venues, there's actually about 6 or 7 wonderful words you can use for that one-word rule. It might be respect. Because really, aren't all the rules you're going to say about respecting themselves, respecting others, respecting the teacher, respecting the learning environment? Cooperate, collaborate, try. So whatever word is going to work for you, I might say, I'm going to remind you that this is a really important idea, and all the rules that we're going to follow come under this one word. And it's certainly more fun to hang up one word and a list of please don't eat in class and raise your hand before speaking and only use the bathroom pass once a day. Like we said before, all the classroom procedures need a system. It's kind of like filling in, how do I do this? And it goes from arrival to dismissal and everything in between. And if you notice that there's a success and a failure sign, if you find yourself dealing with behavior issues or constantly reminding after the fact that a system didn't go well. And what we need to say is, were we proactive enough before? Did we set this up with clear expectations for how this should happen? And if so, did most of the class understand the clear expectations? Are there one or two students that kind of fell out of this and it didn't work for them and I need to go over it with them again? Another thing we want to take a look at is the group dynamics going on in the classroom. And a quick and easy idea to help that, especially at this point in the year when every day somebody else is out with a flu or a strep or a cold, is what we call a study buddy group. A study buddy group actually has 4 children involved in the group, and the teacher makes up the groups, and we can do this all the way from first grade through eighth grade. The study buddy groups have different purposes depending on the grade level. The groups are made up of 1 academically strong student, a weaker student, and 2 or 3, if you need to put 5 students in the group, if it's a very large class, average children. The study buddy groups are twofold. They have a twofold purpose. They are to cut down on everybody using the smartest or the most organized child in the class. So everybody always is going to call him or her for the notes, for papers to be faxed to them if they were absent. And it's also going to help the very weak children who feel uncomfortable to say, I forgot my homework, what is it? Or I don't understand number 3, can you just let me know what we're supposed to do for that? So anytime after school, a study buddy group goes into effect, meaning child A called child B, they'll come back the next day and say, oh, we used our study buddy group. And the whole study buddy group, even the girls that weren't called or the boys that weren't accessed, will be given some type of credit. And perhaps that credit can equal points later on in the year towards a grade, towards a final, towards a quiz. So instead of feeling bad that the weak student has to feel bad that she's calling somebody or she's asking for something or nobody's taking her papers, the whole group is involved and they're happy to do it. That is more for out of school. That doesn't mean that I would use this for the grouping on collaborative work. If you find that out of school doesn't seem to be a problem, an easier way to do this is what we call good neighbors. This specifically helps children that have organizational difficulties. We assign two good neighbors per child, a neighbor to the side that we identify this is your good neighbor, and a neighbor to the front or to the back. And everybody in the classroom has a good neighbor. And we tell them about going on an airplane, and you always hear the warning in case of loss of cabin pressure, the oxygen masks will drop, and the first thing you need to do is put your own on. And after that, you can look around and see who else needs help. So whenever the teacher gives an instruction that's an organizational instruction, take out this, open the page, do this. First, take care of yourself, but also be a good neighbor. Glance over or glance upwards and say, does my neighbor need help finding that, getting that, getting the place? Oftentimes in the past, teachers that have a very disorganized child or a child that even processes slower would assign somebody near them to be a helper to them. But that's embarrassing for that specific child, and it's also a drain on the other child. So if everybody in the room has a good neighbor, now we say, okay, good neighbors, take a peek. And usually some children that did things a little slower don't want their neighbors to have to help. They want to beat their neighbors so they get it out quicker. And if not, we have the system where a good neighbor can say, oh, this is what you need. The reason I give two is because there invariably is going to be a child that is going to need the help all the time, and I don't want his or her one neighbor, let's say it's the side neighbor, to be drained with that student. So sometimes I'll say, be a good side neighbor, and everybody will turn to their side neighbor, or be a good front-back neighbor. So it kind of breaks it up for the child that unfortunately is sitting next to that very disorganized child. Another thing that we like to think about is just like we regularly go for checkups at the dentist 6 months and at the doctor a year. I'm not sure why teeth are more important than bodies, but I guess they are. Is the social information that's going on in your classroom, the social skill sets that the students are using are really important to take a look at. And I guess in this case, we want to use the dental model because by the end of the year, it's too late to do anything about it. So I want to take some time and look around and say, what skills are they really good at? And let me reinforce, wow, I love the way this class includes everybody at recess. Or I notice people are really careful about not interrupting others when they're speaking. Or I see people are so complimentary when other people are sharing information. Or is it a lack of skills that this class is constantly complaining or leaving a certain child out? Are there any skills that I address? Do I have a social skill curriculum that I'm using as a teacher in the classroom? Are there social skills that I can include through my literature, through my Lamude Kodesh subjects? Where can I put the things they need into the classroom? What dynamics need attention? And this is something that's hugely important to look at and probably one of the most valuable things. Instead of just passing on the information at the end of the year, this class doesn't do well with this, what can I do about it now? And again, the winter, most of the students are stuck inside in the middle of the day, at the recess time and at the lunchtime. They're going to invariably get on each other's nerves. It's a really good time to take a look at this. Mid-year teacher and student conferences can work all the way from first grade again through eighth grade. It's kind of going to be a day where you assign some quiet work for a certain period of time. It's ideal to get it done in 1 or 2 days and not to do this just at one part of the day over a week. And call each child up to your desk and let them know, just like we have parent-teacher conferences, because it's so important for the teachers to touch base with the parents to have a chance to hear about the wonderful progress you're making. I'd like to speak to the most important person in this learning situation, you. So I'm going to call each child or each student up to my desk, and we're going to move the desk maybe off to the side so it will be private, or maybe I'll do it at the doorway so the other students won't hear. And I'll ask them, how do you think the first part of your year went? How's third grade been treating you? How's sixth grade? Is it what you expected? Is it easier than you thought? Is it harder? Are you happy with the things we're learning? Is there anything you'd really like to accomplish in the next part of the year? Is there something you thought you'd learn this year? Is there something you want to master? Is there anything you need support with? A teacher just shared with me last week that she did this with a class of fourth graders, and the children were such accurate reporters about their own needs, their strengths, their weaknesses. And a child that had really been struggling with attention and organizational issues said to the teacher, I want to let you know this is something that's so hard for me, and I don't know if I can do any better than I'm doing. And the teacher really commended her for all her hard work and offered some suggestions to help her through that. You want to let them know the different ways you've seen them, their growth and their maturity. And, you know, that might take a little bit of time beforehand, just writing a specific point down for each child to say, you know, when you came in the beginning of the year, I remember some of your earlier writing or your spelling or how you read the stuff and back, and I'm looking at the progress you've made, and I'm just blown away. This is fantastic. You're really on track for, you know, getting yourself successfully to the next grade. Sometimes I'll pull out a portfolio, I'll pull out recent work. They actually love to see work comparisons. If you have portfolios in your classroom or you have samples from the beginning of the year till now, they can really see the growth themselves. Sometimes it's hard to see the, in the, you know, the change on a day-to-day basis. When we look at it over this longer span of time, we're able to see it better. Something I do with the whole class. So again, we're going from macro to micro and back to, you know, macro again, is as a whole class, I say, okay, we're at the midpoint. And if you're counting 100 days, I'm not sure where we're at with that with all our snow days, but we're probably close to it. How many days left do we have until the end of the year? And it's not just something we're counting off because we can't wait to be finished with it. It's something that we want to make count. And I'll go through each subject that we do, and I'll say, what were all the topics that we already covered? What have we learned to do in math? What battles did we learn about in social studies? And the kids are kind of amazed when we list it on the board, and the board gets covered with all the things they learn. And sometimes they'll say, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Oh, that was so much fun when we did this. So it's this great recap of where we've been. And then in each subject, I let them know some of the upcoming topics that they're going to do. In those subjects and in those topics, I like to get some goals from the students. Is there anything more you'd like to learn about this? Do you have an expectation from an older sibling, from a friend, from a neighbor? What did you think you'd come out of this grade learning? With the students, we look at our weekly schedule and we look at our daily schedule. And we say, is this working for us? And sometimes you'll get valuable information from students. We'll say, we don't like to do that after recess. We'd rather do that before. Or we'd like to do more poetry. Or we'd like to do less handwriting. And I try to work out with them and make it work. If they ever say they want to do less of a subject, sometimes we just break up the amount of time that they're doing it. I don't necessarily remove that subject, but instead of doing 15 minutes, you know, twice a week, I might do 5 or 6 minutes once a day to make them feel like we're breaking it down a little bit. What I also want to tell them is, in order to maintain any type of system or any type of flow, certainly teachers notice this when they're thinking about classroom management, we have to attend to what's working well. And we have to pay careful attention to that because that's what we really want to maintain. More so sometimes than what needs to be adjusted. But when we're talking about the adjustments, we're really modeling a great sense of flexibility for the students in our class. And I think flexibility is probably one of the most important skills that you can teach students. Build in exercise if you can. Get them moving at recess. Stretch throughout the day. This part of the year is such a sluggish, even their eating habits. Everybody's, we're eating macaroni and cheese and heavy soups. We're into warm and comfort food. They're probably eating more snack at recess because they're not busy playing games. So whenever you can, build in some movement. Even if you have to do 5 minutes, you're going to find them sharper and more alert. Involve the school. This part of the year is a great part of the year to really take a careful look and see who needs more help that hasn't gotten it already. If you live in New York City, are there P3 referrals that have to be taken care of? Were there referrals made where the services were not yet given? Who's on top of it? Are there any children that could use a larger evaluation, a more in-depth evaluation, more attention to their CREA, a speech eval? If we wait until the end of the year, often because of the time it takes to get evaluations done or scheduled, we're going to lose the fact that we might get any services for the year. Over the summer, papers get lost, meetings don't happen. So it's really important to get on track with that now. I'm not necessarily saying that the teacher should be the one that refers to outside counseling or to more social skill instruction if it's needed. But if you feel strongly that a student in your class needs that, you need to speak to the principal or the supervisor and say, what is being done? And it could be much was done already. It could be the principal already had 2 meetings and 7 phone calls and the parent is just resistant. But you need to check in to make sure that something is happening with that. Any questions so far that you want me to slow down and stop in the chat room with? Okay. Data collection is something that this is a mid-year point of data collection. Data collection is something we do when we need to back ourselves up. So going back to the slide behind, if we have a P3 referral or a need for evaluation or a need for social skill training or a need for some more behavioral intervention, and we have to bring it up with parents or we have to present it to a principal, we can't come with subjective terms or opinions. She's unmotivated. She's lazy. She's weak. She's put to death. What we really want to do is over a 10-day or a 2-week school period, we want to write down all the behaviors that concern us, either things that they are doing or things that they're not doing, whether it's behavior, social, emotional, or academic. And we want to write on that's going across the top of our paper and down the side of our paper. We'll go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And we just make tally marks whenever we see that. So on Monday, she fell out of the seat 11 times just during reading. Or on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, she cried once. One day the crying jag lasted 7 minutes, the next day it lasted 12. So we want to come with reportable, observable, and measurable information. So when we're presenting that to a parent, there's nothing to argue with. They can't say, no, it didn't happen. Or they might say, oh, we had a wedding last night. She was really tired. Or I wasn't able to help her with her homework. That's what she was. So, but when it's over a 2-week period, we're getting an aggregate. We're getting an average. And that's kind of hard to deny. So what we're going to say is we have this concern about this specific area. And just to give you a sense of what it looks like in the classroom, over a 2-week period, on the average, it happens this amount of times. Sometimes we do need to also average the typical child in the class just to show the comparison to how different this is. And oftentimes what we say is the numbers speak for themselves. When we have real data to back ourselves up, it's more meaningful type of conversation. That's the first purpose for data collection. The second purpose for data collection is that whatever intervention is going to be put into place, whether we have to put something into place ourselves or whether there's an outside professional or a school-based professional helping us, we want to give that intervention a chance to work 6 to 8 weeks. And then we want to pull out and do another data collection. We want to examine, are we at the same place? Has it not improved? Have we got a wonderful improvement? Or unfortunately, have things gotten worse? So having real numbers to work with is the best way to keep track of that. Another way to get things back on track at this point of the year is a memo to parents. And if you're lucky enough to have, or I shouldn't say I'm lucky, I'm I'm not sure, as teachers, do you like it or do you not like it? That second semester PTA, and if you don't have that in your school, you can send it in writing. But the same thing, let's get everybody back on track. Ask for a supply refund. We need more pencils. We need more whiteout. We need more loose leaf paper. Many of the items that parents are buying, certainly binders and folders, are consumables. They're not meant to last for 10 months. I also like to let parents know my goals for the end of the year, what we want to accomplish, where we want to finish up. The worst type of feeling is to finish with your class in June, feeling that you just didn't get around to something that was really important. There's a child that fell between the cracks. There's a subject you really just didn't put yourself into this year. So this is the time to get that heads up and make sure we end up where we want to. Some suggestions that I offer teachers to give to parents in the house are the use of embedded schedules for nighttime or for morning routine. So an embedded schedule is where the child and the parent together make a list of all the things that have to happen in that bedtime routine or in that morning routine. I did this recently actually with an eighth grader that has a really hard time getting her act together in the morning. So with younger children, I might do it with some pictures, maybe a picture of them doing it. With older children, I'll just write out the list. We'll laminate this small paper. And instead of nagging them for each point, did you pack your snack? Did you take your lunch money? Do you have clothes laid out for tomorrow? Do you have a clean uniform shirt? I'll just say, here's your checklist, and let me know when it's ready. And for younger children, you can take a paper clip, and they can move it down the schedule or down the checklist. And when they're completed, they'll put the paper clip into some type of jar. And when you get 10 paper clips, you'll reinforce them. And it's just a way of helping them grow with this organizational skill. Something that I have is an everything box, and everything box is all the supplies they'll need, and I keep it in one place. We may have started out like that in September, but we're far from it now. So buy a clear bin at Walmart, get some more pens, some whiteouts, some markers, some highlighters, a dictionary, and have it available, because some children now can't get their homework done because they couldn't find a sharpened pencil, and that pulled 20 minutes. So have everything ready in the homework area. Another thing I have is some type of cute prize box or cute little tchotchkes that go along, and we call it first aid for burnt out students. One thing I have in it, if you can picture that, is that.
That was easy.
The little button from Staples that kids like to press either when it is easy or when the homework's not easy. Digital recorders that cost about $20. If you have a child that needs reading practice, they love to read into those and then listen to themselves. I might put in the stickers. I might put in some funky school supplies to change it up a little bit. I recently saw a book written for fourth graders called How to Do Homework Without Throwing Up. I might sneak something like that, and I'll constantly change what's in that first aid kit, and it gives kids a little bit of a laugh. 911 for homework help. So when homework's really not going well, many parents, again, we're not fresh, we're not excited. It's a drag. It's hard to do. So what I suggest is what we call designated homework time. Some students are done with their homework in 5 minutes, and then most of it is not done or it's done incorrectly because they've sped through it. So what we suggest to parents is to say, you know, that we're going to spend 35 minutes at the table doing homework. If you finish in 5 minutes, you'll still spend the next 30 minutes with me, and we'll just review something else, or we'll just do something else, or you'll need to be here in this homework situation. So finishing earlier is not necessarily getting you out of it earlier. So once they realize mom or dad is here during this time and I'm going to be here also, I might as well get it done and use it the time correctly. The homework supply bin, we mentioned it on the slide before, everything that they could need and supply-wise to get homework done effectively. Outsource when necessary. You might be struggling. The parent might be struggling with the child. Do they need a tutor? Do they need just a homework helper? Do they need a neighbor? You know, is there a girl from a high school that can come in to help and get things moving? Treats and shit, keep it exciting. That's like the first aid kit. And every now and then, throw in something that's yummy to eat. What we say is that we all need incentives to carry us over a slump. The students do, the teachers do, and so do the parents. And really, we want to address this now, because as we get closer to term, the parents are going to be busy with that. And certainly after that, one thing is on their minds, and that's Pesach. It's very hard to attend to school the same way. So now is kind of a clearer attention time for parents to do this. And really the most important reason, and I really can't stress it enough, is all these things that we're doing, they may or they may not make a difference in your classroom, and they may not make a difference for the child for this year. But what we're really modeling is this is what a responsible adult looks like. Adults know where they're going. They have a direction. So you're going to do that by setting the goals with the students and letting them know where you're going to be with your curriculum at the end of the year. Purging of unnecessary stuff. I mean, you can buy more magazines to bring into your house nowadays about simplifying your life, which is probably kind of like an oxymoron. Or you can certainly go to, you know, an entire store called the Container Store to simplify your life. But really, we don't need to hold on to stuff. Stuff bogs us down, certainly unnecessary things. So let's teach them that early. Flexibility to change things that aren't working. So at this mid-year talking point, an evaluation point, and we're saying to the students, what's working well for us? What's not working? Don't be afraid to say, you know what, guys? You're right. This isn't working well. Let's change this up a little bit. You're modeling that even an adult can backtrack, can backpedal, can change, can say, you know what? Let's look at something that's going to be more effective. Paying attention to the small details. These are some of the biggest life lessons that you can teach your students. And I want to thank you for joining me tonight. I wish you a warm weather in the near future and a lot of hatzlacha getting this back on track before spring fever begins in earnest. And I want to take the time now to open up the chat room to any questions you might have that are more specific in nature or that need some more clarification.
Thank you so much, Tzipora. What a great resource. While people are thinking about questions, I just want to remind them that they're going to receive an email with a survey. Please fill it out. And a reminder regarding question asking. In order, you can either type a question into the chat room or you can raise your hand. That's the hand icon in the middle of the chat room. You can click on the hand and we will unmute your phone if you'd like to ask your question over the phone instead of in the chat room. While people are thinking about their questions, upcoming webinars, on Wednesday, March 5th, we're going to have a joint parent and teacher webinar, What's Behind Children's Challenging Behavior and What Can We Do to Help, with Claire Wurzel. And followed by March 26th for teachers, Screen Time and Bullying for Elementary through High School Age Students with Jeannie Crowley. That's the third of a series of webinars with Jeannie. You don't have to have participated in the first two to participate in the third. In order to register or find out more details about these webinars, you can go to the Hidden Sparks website, which is on the screen right now, www.hiddensparks.org. And you can also call into the office if you'd like to speak with someone and ask questions in order to register. Now, there's a question in the chat room. Please, can you reshow the slide 6 month social checkup?
Sure. Let me go back.
Okay.
To that.
And Chavi, if you have a question about the slide, you can type that into the chat room. And I also would like to remind everyone that in about 24 hours, you can access all of the materials that Tzipora has shared with us, both the visual and the audio, will be available on the website for download or for streaming at any time. And Chavi, again, if you have a follow-up question, feel free either to raise your hand or type it into the chat room.
Okay, so the slide is back up there, and it says, what skills or lack of skills have you noticed? Which skills have you addressed so far this year? What social dynamics need attention? and how can you include skills throughout your teaching? One question that I do get on this slide is, well, how should I know what skills they have or don't have? So there are a lot of good resources for social skills that actually have menus or checklists. Jed Baker has an excellent menu or checklist. I think we've spoken about him and given him as a resource in our last webinar about social skills. So he has a great checklist. Michelle Garcia Winner on her website, Thinking About Me, Thinking About You, has some great checklists. Rick Lavoie on his blog has a lot of good lists of skills. So we look at that, and we also look at what our expectations are, either from teaching this grade before or from having children our own of this age, and kind of going from there of what's really expected and what's unexpected.
Sipora, can I ask you a question? It was something that appeared later in a later slide. It was about having sort of not just a set time for homework, but a set amount of time.
Yes.
I think so you said, I mean, obviously that time would vary by the child and their age. I'm just curious if you could talk a little bit about what the goals for that are.
So we call that designated homework time, and it actually it's a good idea if it's around the same time every day, because that becomes part of the household routine. And we also have a specific amount of time, and we only need to have the specific amount of time when we have children that are rushers. You know, they're rushing through it because the quicker they finish it, the faster they'll be off to play. If your child is a child that can rush through it and get it done correctly, then they're just fast, and that's okay. But if you have a child that's rushing through it for the sake of getting done, but is really doing it haphazardly or half-baked, that what we want to do for that child is to say, in our family, we need to take some time, and I'm going to give it that amount of time. And even if you're finished earlier, I'll test you on your multiplication tables. I'll review your show Rushem. We're going to use this as a learning and a studying time. Most children, when given that choice, would rather just do their own homework than doing extra studying. And it does get a child that rushes through things back on track, because they know they're not leaving the area until that happens. Does that help you?
Yes, it does.
Okay,
and
good.
We have a question in the chat room from Malka. What suggestions do you have for students that are always losing sheets, leaving them at home, stuffing them in desks, etc., and not caring to take the time to look through their stuff? And this is after having systems set up and places to put things.
So that is a great suggestion. And the fact that you already have systems set up and places to put things, and that's not helping the child, we need something a little bit more drastic. So what I say is, I don't know about the rest of you, but I have a junk drawer in my kitchen. And anything that I'm not sure what to do with, whether it's a piece of mail or some coins from Chuck E. Cheese or a paper clip, I throw it in the junk drawer, and periodically we clean out the junk drawer and return this person's headband and that person's beret and, you know, this insurance card, and everything goes back in its right place. But in the immediacy, it goes in the junk drawer. For students like this, we get them an accordion folder that has a flap that closes, and I say to them throughout the day, everything goes in this folder. Do not worry about putting it in, you know, on the right hand side of your blue pocket folder, because it'll never get there. If they know they have one place to put everything, at the end of the day, if you have a cooperative parent, then you can say, this junk drawer folder goes home, and your mother will help you or your father will help you put the right sheets in the right sections. If you don't have a home that you can liaison, you're going to have to find the time or have some type of coaching situation in school, even for 5 or 10 minutes, where you actually go through that folder with the child, or somebody else goes through the folder with that child and gets it put in the right place. But this helps it from being crumpled and being lost, either in the back of the desk or being put in the garbage from the floor. It's not an organizational system. It's kind of like a, you know, last ditch approach to just not leaving it all together.
I have one more question, and it's sort of going to reflect on my learning challenges. You gave such a wonderful suggestion earlier on about taking 3 days to observe what's going on. I'm curious what suggestions you might have, and this is kind of a tough question, for teachers who they themselves struggle with organizational or materials management issues.
So it's a great question, Judith, because it's going to make it all the more difficult for the teacher to be able to manage it with the students. So during this 3-day period, you might need to say to yourself as this type of teacher, I know I'd like to do all these things, but that's not really realistic. And in the past, I haven't been able to follow through. What can I do from this big list? Meaning what absolutely has to be done? And if I'm not sure how I'll be able to manage that, is there somebody in my school, a good friend, a colleague, that could give me some advice for getting that piece of it together? Every executive takes some guidance and coaching from organizational leaders, from leaders in their industry. And that's what we need to do as teachers. Look to other teachers that have it organized and say, what's your system for this? Or how do you do this? I know some teachers have told me they've gone on flylady.com and gotten some wonderful organizational tips as well. Some books about executive functioning by Peg Dawson, which are actually have a lot of tips for the students the teachers can make use of as well to get some of those ideas. So that would be the way of like looking at it, seeing what needs to be done, kind of prioritizing, saying, I'm probably not going to get to all of this. So what are the one or two biggies that I have to before I can help my students with some of these areas? And I think there's another question that kind of is a segue into this. There's a question that says, what if the students don't care? What if you have a child that really doesn't care? And you're going to have students like that, and you are going to be more limited into how you can help them. For some of them, we're going to differentiate. It's not that they didn't care. It's they're so overwhelmed, so they'd rather look as if they don't care than get upset about it. So if I don't have a clue of where my things should go or that I didn't remember to bring my stuff back, I'd rather have a nonchalant attitude about it. I'd rather always look bad than stupid. So we need to kind of differentiate for those students. We need to address them individually and say, I can help you with this. I know this is hard. Here are some ideas. I'm going to work with you. I'm going to monitor it. We're going to celebrate when we get better at this. For a child that truly does not care, you're really not. All these ideas are really not going to go very far, but you're still going to model what a responsible adult looks like. And maybe at a different point in their life or down the line, they're going to remember that these were things that had value.
We have a question. You made a reference to flyladies.com.
Flyladies.com is she's a professional organizer that has some books and has a website, household tips, management ideas, cleaning and organization.
So is it Fly Lady?
I think it's Fly Lady, yeah. L-A-D-Y.
Okay, I think I've posted it to the chat room. I hope that we've spelled it correctly.
Right.
Okay, I think what we'd like to do now is, Betsy, if we can, open up the call-in phone. Is that something that we can do now?
Absolutely.
Okay, first I'd like to, I'm going to remind all the people who have called in just by phone, not online. We'd like to open up your phones so that we can, so that you can ask any questions that you have. But I need to remind you that you have to be in a quiet room, otherwise the noise is quite alarming. So please make sure you're in a quiet room. We will unmute your phones one at a time. And if you have a question, just go ahead and ask it. Don't wait to be called on. Just ask your question. Okay, I'm going to guess that there aren't any questions from the call-in people, but I do want to thank Tzipora again. What a fantastic and rich webinar that I know people will be coming back to because there's so much there and so many resources and so many ideas. So thank you very much, and it really does come at the perfect time when people are really feeling drained and disorganized. Thank you to all the participants. Thank you to Betsy. Please, if you're interested, register for the upcoming webinars. Here's some information on Hidden Sparks partners and donors and supporters. We really do appreciate the collaboration that we have with these organizations. Everyone, have a wonderful night. And again, Tzipora and Betsy, thank you.
Thank you, Judith, and thank you, Betsy.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.